welcome to the AquariumMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 85, recorded October 24th, 2011.
Indeed.
I was a little unsure about that.
That's fine. Greetings, everyone.
Hello.
We have much to talk about today.
Yes, if you will recall, last week we talked about a funky spa pedicure treatment involving wee little fishies nibbling on your feet to take off, slough off, if you will, dead skin and whatnot.
I think that was actually a couple weeks ago.
Oh, was it not last week?
That's okay.
Okay, see, I didn't recall.
That's okay. But Stuart noticed something about that. He put a picture of a headline about that. Apparently, some folks are worried about viruses, which I think we mentioned a little bit, but we didn't have any headlines to back it up or anything. I can't remember, but yes, he shared a headline with us on Facebook, so you can check that out if you like. Basically, that they could help spread certain viruses, and interesting, probably true. Not the fish spreading the viruses per se, but just the fact that people are sticking their feet into containers of water that somebody else is just stuck their feet into, so, and they're not chlorinated, so that makes sense. So thank you for sharing that, Stuart from UK, by the way.
Yes. Oh, and Brian also sent us something on Facebook.
Yes, Brian from Idaho.
Very odd.
In Idaho.
I think it would make me nervous, even if I knew. I mean, it's cool, but if it were in my house, it would make me... I think my dragon would be nervous.
And your feng shui dragon?
My feng shui dragon would be nervous.
Maybe so. You know, the Salvador Dali, the guy who makes the dripping clocks?
And all sorts of bizarre things.
All sorts.
Can I...
Go ahead.
Okay, this is a total tangent, but can I tell my surrealist joke?
Okay.
Okay. How many surrealists does it take to change a light bulb?
How many?
Fish.
I like that one.
See, it is said fish.
It's true. Really, that's the actual answer to the joke.
But it's fish.
It's true.
I like that one. That's a good one.
And the bowls relate to, they look like those watches kind of that are dripping off the tree branches, in that this bowl looks as if it's dripping off whatever sort of surface you've set it on.
You know, it kind of looks like you brought a fish home in a big bag from the pet store and you put it on the edge of the table and the bag is
melting,
falling off the table.
But it's a fish bowl. Of course, we wouldn't want to put goldfish in that, or
like they have in the pictures.
Like, yeah, we wouldn't want to put goldfish in there. But maybe some really wee teeny fish, like eastern mosquito fish, or, you know, a couple of those. Or a shrimp bowl.
Shrimp.
Yeah, shrimp bowl. Opaiula bowl.
That would be interesting.
Those are shrimp, too, and they would...
I wonder what that would do to their swimming habits. They ours like to swim in a circle. I wonder if they would
still basically navigate.
Go down into the lower part of the tank. Do you think they would bother, or they just stay up in the top?
I don't know. It would be interesting to see. But yeah, thank you for Brian for sharing that. That's an interesting sort of bowl. I don't know, just bizarre. But kinda cool.
It's very cool. Okay, Andreka in Oregon has something to say about her mono shrimp.
Yeah, she mentioned that we were talking about Juliet's shrimp and how she was mentioning that shrimp hide a lot less if you have them without any fish, and so Andreka moved her shrimp into a different tank, and now she sees it a lot more.
Yay!
So, that's cool.
Glad that worked.
Oh, and Andreka, we're still working on your top 10 list, our top 10 list of movies. The problem is there's like 400.
Oh, was it Andreka who asked for that?
It was.
Okay, yeah. Tell people what she asked for exactly.
A list of the top 10 things that we quote, so that when we quote stuff on the podcast, people will figure out what
we'll
talking
put it.
About.
This is your bonus features list. You have to go watch all of these to understand our obscure comments.
We're probably going to put that up on the Facebook list once we narrow it down. We have too many to figure out, but we'll eventually do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have something from Mick.
Yes, Mick got some pictures of his rabbit snails, his yellow rabbit snails, and he's attached that, so we'll put that on the resources page. And I think I have seen this particular species in my LFS not too long ago. They have a really interesting body color. It's yellow.
And like not their shell, but...
No, their body.
Their little foot.
Yeah, the fleshy part of their body, their foot and their proboscis and their rhinopores, I think they're called.
They really call them rhinopores?
I think that's what it is. I could be wrong, but that's
okay.
I think that's
that
what it is.
That needs to go on the band list name. Proboscis okay. and the rhinopores.
Okay,
that would be great.
Could do that, and it's cool because of the wild type coloration. It just comes like that. A lot of things from like the Sulawesi creatures, the fauna there, are just incredibly colored, just right off. And he also said that he's getting his yellow cherry shrimp and his white pearl shrimp or snowball shrimp. Apparently, it's the same thing. Scientific name, Neocaridina. I can't even pronounce that. So I'm not going to, but we'll put it on the resources page with a picture if we can. And it's just amazing to me that shrimp are so variable in coloration. I mean, you got all these different
things. That is pretty cool.
Everything
a lot of it's fairly frequent. I'm not frequent. What am I saying? Recent, isn't it?
Some of, yeah.
Like the color variations and things?
There are naturally occurring color varieties of shrimp that are amazing. And then there are also cultivars that are amazing that are, yeah, fairly new. Yeah. And he said he likes your idea of a special shrimp section in intro, like a bulletin-style music followed by James Earl Jones booming out, shrimp news.
Oh, see, so I like it.
We'll see if we can get James
Earl
Jones to do
that.
No, that it might be impossible.
We'll get somebody to impersonate James Earl Jones.
There you go. And he said,
could probably do a pretty good James Earl Jones if you practice.
Maybe. Said he agrees that one of the best things any aquarist, old or new, can do is join a local club. He's had great experiences with that and met fantastic people. Got some really good stuff at almost giveaway prices compared to even a really good shop. And this is a point that I don't think we mentioned at all last time. It's a great place to swap, trade, and even sell off any fish that you've been breeding. So
that's a good point too.
Yeah. Oh, he says he's got some green sailfin mollies coming in.
Green sailfin mollies?
Yeah, it's like the natural color variety of sailfin mollies.
So is it green or is it like natural fish grayish?
Well,
and they call it green.
I'm, as you know, somewhat colorblind. I'm going to I see colors, but I'm not very reliable at telling which colors are what.
He's red-green colorblind.
So I'm going to reserve judgment on that one.
I'll have to see a picture.
I know what they look like to me.
Excuse me.
And I call them green, but...
Is their official name green?
They're often called green sailfin mollies, yeah. It's the wild-type coloration. There are now black sailfin mollies, but that's because of, you know, selective breeding and hybridization and whatnot. And I believe there are gold ones that they're coming up with all sorts of mollies now. But anyway, that's the green sailfin mollies. That's what the wild-type coloration is called. And they're really cool. And he's getting two pairs of them. And he's putting them into a 3-foot by 1 foot by 18-inch tank.
I'm sorry. That was a lot of numbers I'm trying to visualize.
three feet long, 1 foot deep that way towards the wall, and 18 inches high.
Neat.
And he's making some floating mops for the fry.
So like spawning mops? For the fries to hide.
Right.
The fry to hide in, not for the fries.
No.
To hide in. Those would be soggy fries.
They would be soggy fries. And he hasn't had any new live bears for a while, so he's looking forward to building up a nice breeding colony. And I would like to say sailfin mollies can be spectacular. They can be very amazing. And as far as eating the fry concerned, the mops will probably help some, but also, of course, keeping the adults well-fed, because most mollies aren't really all that big into eating their fry. Mm-hmm. Not that it won't happen necessarily ever, but they're less interested in eating their fry, I think, than some of the other live bears are.
So if they're getting plenty to eat, then it probably shouldn't be too bad.
Right. In my experience, mollies don't eat them, and a lot of other people have repeated this, but when my mollies have reproduced, I don't see them eating a lot of fry. The fry are bigger in proportion to the adults, too, generally, than other live bears. Like, proportionately, a guppy fry is smaller in proportion to its mother than a molly fry is in proportion to its own mother. I haven't really done sailfin mollies, specifically, but I've done other kinds of mollies. And so I imagine that probably holds over.
Mollies have kind of a special place in my heart.
Yeah, they were one of the first fish you identified.
And yes, they were my first favorite fish.
Yeah.
Because, this is flashback. Russ and I are dating. I grew up with dogs and cats and a couple horses for a while, you know, nothing too exotic. So to me, all fish looked like goldfish, which Russ thankfully liked me enough to overlook this gross... lack in my character.
That's not a lack in your character, merely your education.
Here we go. So, we spent a lot of times in pet stores with him pointing out fish and trying to teach me what they were. And black leer tail mollies were some of my first favorites that I could tell apart from other pets.
Yep, and we eventually got some.
We did.
And we had fun with those. Mm-hmm. They were cool. So, there you go. One thing about sail fins, almost everybody says this, is that they need a lot of space. They need excellent water quality, of course, but a lot of space to be able to develop good size and good sails.
See, you can use that voice for the James Earl Jones impersonation.
I don't think it's very similar, but at least it's deeper than my normal voice, I guess. So for ideal development of sails, you might actually need more space than that. Than you've
than
got.
18 inches?
Yeah. Well, it's only 18 inches high, 3 feet long.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, these things are big, you know?
Like
sail fin mollies.
Are these not the ones that I think that I've seen?
Maybe
sail
not.
Sail fins?
Maybe not.
How tall are their dorsal fins?
Oh, huge. Like.
How do they even, but their body size is normal?
They're bigger than most of the mollies are used
okay.
to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they can get really big. And, so. One thing you might try, I know you work with ponds, and you have a pond in the summer, of course, not right now, it's way too late for that at this point, but you could try putting some fry out in a pond and let them eat a lot of algae and mosquito larvae and get really big. And, you know, that would be a good grow-out thing. Or, you know, you can grow some fry in that tank, but I don't think you'd be able to get very many that have maximal sail fin development in that size.
So, in the 18 inches.
Right.
Okay.
Well, it's 18 inches high and 3 feet long.
Yes, yeah. But I'm thinking of the tall because their fin
because of the
doesn't
fins.
Go to the side.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
It goes up.
Yeah, it's more of a
function. We all fired up. Put that one on the list, friend.
Okay, that's a good one. Yes. Okay, so, it's not just the fact that they need to have enough space for their fin to reach from their back up to the surface of the water. It's more of function of they just need a whole lot of space.
Just to move around.
Yeah, a whole lot of swimming space.
Okay.
And so.
You should write a book titled Fish Feng Shui.
That would be interesting.
That would be fun.
And so there's just one thing to think about. And another thing to think about is nobody ever agrees on salt for mollies. They really don't. But you've got a lot of people that say, yes, you need salt. I raise them in full-strength marine water, which you can do if they're acclimatized to that. And other people say, well, I just have hard alkaline water and I don't need any salt. And they do fine as well, and then you have all people in between.
So they're just pretty adaptable.
They are very adaptable. They can't just jump from one to the other, necessarily. But they, right away, you know, it's better to acclimate them more slowly, but...
So you need to find out what conditions they're coming from.
Yes. But they're pretty adaptable, and so... That's always a good thing. And he also says he's going to try to give us a message on our message machine soon.
Yay!
That would be cool.
Then you guys can hear somebody's voice other than ours.
Yeah. And hopefully
ours aren't too objectionable, but
no,
it is nice to have some variety.
That's true. Hopefully it's not too expensive for you calling from UK. But yeah, so thanks, Mick.
Oh, who do we have next? Hey, Russ!
Yeah, Russ.
Except not you, huh?
No, not me. A different Russ.
A different Russ.
And I believe this is the Russ.
With two S's?
With two S's.
You're the Russ with one S.
Right. And you can't really hear that.
That should be your Halloween costume. I'll just make you a t-shirt that says, I'm Russ with one S.
With one S. There you go. Now, I believe he's contributed before, I'm pretty sure. I know we've had Russ's contributed before,
familiar.
And I think this is the same one looking at his email address, which I
Where's
shall not read on the air.
Where's he from?
Doesn't say just here, but... That's okay. We'll just go with this. And he says he's going to offer some feedback, which, of course, we always value.
Yay, feedback.
In case the others feel the same as I, but have not written in. I have had enough shrimpy talk and encourage you to initiate a rotation of additional aquarium topics. The aquarium hobby is quite diverse. The information you provide is intelligent, informative, and entertainingly personal.
That's good.
Yeah, I like that. Entertainingly personal. That sounds cool. Well, and, you know, he says keep up the good work, too.
Okay.
And
so we may have to not do the shrimp section.
Or we can do it, but just maybe not every week or something. I don't know.
The break. This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything.
It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
Okay.
Okay, we're back from our break.
Well, thank you very much, Russ, for the feedback. We appreciate all of it. And the hobby is indeed very diverse, and balance and diversity are much to be desired in a show such as this. So, we will do our best. Of course, shrimp are great, and we're all grateful for the shrimp-related contributions that we receive. But we're also very happy to talk about other aspects of the hobby. And basically, the show for some time now has been run based on what we get. We get comments, questions, call-ins, and so on. And that's what we've been doing, and so we have had more on the shrimpy side lately, but we are, you know, welcome. Mm-hmm. We welcome anything.
Any other contributions?
Any aquarium-related contributions at all.
I think we should start hooking up another interview soon, too.
Yes, we want to do some more interviews, too, and we'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of the show. And speaking of things to talk about, Russ has also sent a different message, providing some material for discussion on another topic, which we're going to talk about a bit now.
Oh, he sent us two messages?
He did. And this one's cool. I like this. It's about brackish water.
Brackish water ties in with mollies.
Yeah, it kind of does. Although he's not thinking about keeping mollies.
What is he going to
do? He could keep mollies in a brackish tank, but he's thinking about Monodactylus. And these are fish that they vaguely look like a freshwater angelfish in their general body shape.
Mm-hmm.
Vaguely. They don't have really long pectoral, dorsal, or anal fins as long as angelfish, but their general body shape is kind of like that. They're laterally compressed and have sort of a triangular shape.
Where are they from?
You know, I'm not sure. But they're popular in brackish water tanks. And then archerfish.
Archerfish are fun.
Those are fun, yeah. I've never kept them, but I've seen them in displays.
He's always
in
wanted
public
to,
aquariums. They're very interesting. Figure eight puffer.
No, it's a figure eight puffer.
Figure eight puffer is so named because of a pattern that supposedly resembles a figure eight. It's not one
that
of the larger
It has
puffers.
In markings?
Markings, yeah. It's fairly small.
It doesn't,
as a puffer.
It's not a confused fish that swims around in a figure eight all the time.
No, one would hope not.
Seems like that would be dizzying.
Yeah. And maybe bumblebee gobies.
Mm.
Now, bumblebee gobies are awesome. I would love to have bumblebee gobies someday. All of those are cool fish, but he said the more
he's thinking about keeping all of those, or those are his options?
Well, that's what he's going to get into.
Okay.
He's saying the more I read, the more confused I get, because he's looking at setting up a 60-gallon tank.
That's a nice size.
Nice size of tank. He's wondering if it will house a good grouping of the fish listed. And that's his first question. And two, he's wondering, because he has read that the fish may not be the best tank mates, but he's seen examples in videos and pictures online with those species together. So, he's wondering, will all of these tanks have issues as the fish mature? Let me know what you know.
Alrighty.
Okay. Well, my response, I could start out by saying, first of all, a 60-gallon brackish tank sounds like a lot of fun. I have played around with some brackish things, but I must admit that most of my experience with brackish tanks is limited to things like Opiula and a few other inverts, like left-handed hermit crabs and, you know, a couple of other things. So you need to take my information or my response with a few tablespoonfuls of salt per gallon.
But don't.
But I have researched some of these fish a bit because I'm interested in them and so on. And I can give you some things that I have found, but with my disclaimer, of course, that I haven't done it, so There you go. So figure eight puffers, from what I can tell, and puffers in general, of course, vary in aggression individually. I have kept some puffers, but not figure eight puffers. So some of them are gentle, fairly gentle, and some of them are unholy terrors.
Gentle for puffers, or just gentle by whatever standard?
Well, gentle for puffers, I think.
Okay, so still kind of...
From what I can determine, yeah, they're not the most aggressive of the puffers out there, but some of them are still vicious to other fish.
Right.
And there's no way to know what you're going to get without risking it. I mean, you can risk it and see and remove fish as needed, and that's probably about the best you can get. And that's, you know, not ideal, of course. You could end up with some serious problems, but... An interesting thing that I've also read, and I'll try to put this post on the resources page if I can, I read that archerfish can actually attack puffers, like figure eight puffers, and will grow large enough so that they do so, and they might be interested in doing that. So that's interesting. And I've read also that archers will eat bumblebee gobies.
Do archers just... Are they just kind of a whatever fits in my mouth fish?
Well, most fish are kind of whatever fits in my mouth fish.
But they have a big mouth?
They get fairly large. They get a lot larger than bumblebee gobies, for sure. And some sources that I've looked at say that bumblebee gobies might work with figure eight puffers. But one issue is that the gobies are not aggressive eaters. They really are not.
What do they eat?
They like to eat mostly live things that swim by, amphipods, brine shrimp. Worms or whatever.
Okay.
But they seem to be mostly ambush micro-predators. So they sit somewhere and wait for something to swim within grabbing distance, and then they grab it. Which doesn't make for a very aggressive feeder in a tank full of voracious fish.
And so, they stay on the bottom, don't they? Don't gobies usually stay on the bottom?
A lot of gobies do. Bumblebee gobies, they usually stake out a little territory somewhere, maybe on a rock or something, or... Mm-hmm.
But they're not up in the water column for when the food is drifting down?
Not as much as a lot of other fish.
Okay.
So, live foods, you know, things like that, or suitable substitutes might need to be target fed. And that can spell trouble in a tank full of really aggressive feeders. You know, it can be hard to do. And there's also a lot of debate about the salinities that bumblebee gobies do well in. Because apparently there are various species of bumblebee gobies... And they're almost impossible to tell apart, unless you're an ichthyologist, an expert in gobies. And several sources have mentioned that there are some that are found in soft, acid black water. Very
What's
different
black water?
From salt water. It has a lot of tannins in it, from like wood or leaves and so on. And others are found in marine or near-marine salinities. And some of them can be from the same species, but found in those different environments, and you don't know what you get. You know, if someone imports the fish, you don't know which sort of environment it came from. So you really don't know where to put it in. But apparently, a lot of people agree that you can keep them in at least fairly hard, fairly alkaline water. Most of them will do okay, even those from the softer water. But it makes it sound kind of tricky.
There are some risks there.
Trying to find out which sort of salinity would be better for them, and the acclimation process might be a little difficult. And I even read one post that said that the monodactylus could attack bumblebee gobies. So, it sounds like the bumblebee gobies are going to be the riskiest fish to include there. The most likely to have problems with all of those other ones, assuming you choose one fish that's going to be the most difficult out of all of those, probably the bumblebee goby would be the hardest to succeed with. And maybe the monos and the archerfish would be the least risky mix if you're going to mix two. But, once again, I can't speak from personal experience. At the Waikiki Aquarium, which I can speak about from personal experience, because we used to go there a lot, they had a really tall setup with archerfish in it, and I think there were monos in there, and maybe some mud skippers, and I'm pretty sure they had feather duster worms in there. It was a really cool setup. They had real mangroves growing in it, and I think some fake ones as well. But they had planted live mangroves that were growing up. And so there was a lot of vertical height in this setup. It looked really nice. And it would be fun to do something like that, you know, with a tank.
The archerfish could shoot down the bugs.
Yeah, you set some crickets on the mangroves and have the the archerfish shoot them down.
That would be fun.
I've also read a really interesting bit about creating a beach area out of polystyrene, you know, styrofoam, basically, where you get a block of it and you cover it with sand. I can't remember for sure, but I think somebody coated it with a layer of the silicone adhesive,
mm-hmm.
and then sprinkled sand on it so the sand would adhere to this polystyrene.
So you form it first, the shape that you want.
You cut it into the shape that you want, and then they set it in so that it was a beach area
mm-hmm.
in their aquarium where the water level was such in the aquarium that there was kind of a land area and a little pool area,
mm-hmm.
and it was all, you know, different heights and everything, so that the mud skippers could hang around on this beach.
That's
and they
cool.
could go take a dip in the little pool if they wanted to, and so on. And it seems like that would be a lot of fun to do something like that. And then maybe if they're compatible, and I think they were in the Waikiki Aquarium, I think they had mud skippers in there, to put archerfish in there and mud skippers. That would be really interesting.
That would be fun.
And they both like to eat insects and so on, so that could be fun. I don't know. I wish I knew more about that. So I do invite those of you who have kept brackish tanks, if you have, somebody out there, then come talk to us. You know, let us know about this particular setup that Russ is contemplating and what your input is. Also, if you would like to do an interview on brackish tanks in general, or your specific setup or something, that would be a lot of fun. We would appreciate that greatly. We'd also be interested, something I've been wanting to do for a while, is get someone who breeds bettas on here and tell us how to do that.
Does Carlos?
Carlos does it. If Carlos wants to do it, I'd be totally happy to do that. No pressure, but if you'd like to, I'd love to have you do that.
I would throw out there, too, if there are topics that you guys specifically would like us to find someone to interview on.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com.
For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.
At least we tried.
But probably we'll find somebody.
I hope. So, until next time, ladies and gentlemen.
Best fishes.